All right, so get ready because we're about to take a deep dive into some serious
Comedy
drama.
drama.
Well, get ready because we are diving into the life of King David.
Go ahead.
But not the, harp playing, giant slaying David you might already know.
Right.
Today we're going to be using a set of academic lecture notes on the books of 1 and 2 Samuel,
Oh.
specifically chapters 13 through 15.
Yeah, those are juicy.
Oh. They are packed
Yeah.
with intrigue and family feuds and the consequences of some
Bar-um.
pretty intense choices, let me tell you.
And this is a part of David's life that is so fascinating because it really does reveal a different side to him
Right.
than, that hero that we so often think of.
Totally.
He's really facing in this section of his life all the repercussions
Yeah.
of his past
What
actions.
you reap what you sow, right?
Totally.
Yeah.
He's dealing with specifically the adultery with Bathsheba
Right.
and the murder of her husband Uriah.
Oh, I remember those stories. And it's interesting because the lecture notes call this installment number two in a fourfold payment for David's sins. So
Oh, so there's more to come.
there's more to come, right?
Yeah.
Installment number one, if you recall, was the death of David and Bathsheba's first child.
Oh, that's right.
So it just makes you wonder what else is in store.
Yeah, you kind of get nervous as a reader thinking about that.
Yeah, right. What's going to happen next?
Yeah.
But the thing that really strikes me is how both these installments seem to involve David abusing his power
Yeah.
and sending people to their deaths.
Right.
First Uriah, and now, indirectly, his own daughter Tamar and his son Amnon.
That's a really insightful point. And the lecture notes point out that in both of these situations, he acts without fully understanding the situation.
Yes.
So he sends Uriah to the front lines,
Right.
which, we all kind of know is essentially a death sentence.
Yeah.
But then he also sends Tamar to Amnon's house completely unaware of his son's
Right. Like
intentions.
he's just so oblivious or blind to the danger
It's almost like he's blind to the danger.
that he's putting people
He's
in.
putting other people in.
Is there a pattern here? Is David, despite all his good intentions,
Yeah.
so used to having this power and wielding it that he doesn't really see
Yeah.
the potential consequences?
What makes you think, right? Because is that true? And it speaks to a larger theme, too,
Yeah.
that I think runs throughout all these chapters,
Right.
that this idea of like the unintended consequences
Yeah.
of leadership.
That's good. And especially.
Even leadership that's considered like divinely ordained,
Yeah.
right?
Okay, so let's talk about Amnon and what he does to Tamar.
Okay.
The text really deliberately uses this brother-sister language to describe their relationship.
Okay.
Now, as you know, they share the same father,
Right.
but different mothers.
Yes.
What do you make of that choice of words?
Well, the lecture notes actually suggest that the author's doing that on purpose. It seems like he's intentionally highlighting that, like incestuous and
Expand.
forbidden nature of what's going on.
Yeah.
It's not just a simple case of,
Yeah.
oh, one sibling having feelings for the other.
Yeah.
It's a transgression,
Yeah.
right, of societal norms
Totally.
and like a violation of the sacred bond of family.
Absolutely. And then there's that whole thing with Amnon's advisor, Jonadab,
Yeah.
who comes up with this scheme to get Tamar alone with
Oh
Amnon.
yeah, he's a sneaky guy.
He's portrayed as the shrewd operator, but isn't there something really disturbing about
Oh, I don't
his
know.
willingness to
Should I
like
think like
facilitate this horrible act?
I think Jonadab's role is so crucial here. And it really does make you think about that complicity,
Yeah.
the insidious nature of evil. Because he's not the one who commits the rape,
Yeah.
but he's the one who makes it happen.
Right.
He's the architect of this situation, right?
Absolutely. And then, of course, we have the rape itself.
Right.
Tamar explicitly tells Amnon, Enno points out how wicked his actions are.
It's just heartbreaking.
It's such a powerful and heartbreaking scene.
Yeah.
But what I find really fascinating is what she does afterward.
Okay.
She begs Amnon to speak to the king,
Okay.
almost as if she thinks David might like condone this or allow this. What's going on there?
Well, the lecture spends quite a bit of time on this point.
Okay.
And I think you're right. On the one hand, it highlights just utter desperation.
Yeah.
Like she's grasping at straws. She's trying to figure out how to get out of this horrible situation.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, it does make you wonder, right,
Yeah.
about how David is perceived
Right.
within his own family. Like,
Right.
does Tamar actually believe that her father might allow this?
Right.
Or is she just trying to delay the inevitable?
Yeah. Either way, it paints a pretty bleak picture, the family dynamics.
Right.
And then the lecture notes bring up this really interesting parallel between Amnon's rape of Tamar and the story of the Levite's concubine in the book of Judges.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now, that story, as you know, is incredibly brutal.
Oh, yeah, it is.
This woman is gang raped and murdered.
Right.
And it triggers a civil war.
Yeah.
Why do you think the author of Samuel would draw that connection?
Well, the lecture suggests that it's a way of showing just how much corruption and moral decay there is in David's court.
Yeah.
And by bringing up the events of the time of the judges, which is a period known for like lawlessness and violence.
Yeah.
It's like the author's saying, hey, look at this.
Yeah.
David's own household is kind of mirroring chaos and the justice of that earlier era.
Wow. Okay. So David is facing the consequences of his actions.
Yeah.
But what about Amnon? Does he get away with this?
Well, not exactly.
Okay.
Remember, Tamar has a full brother, Absalom.
Oh, that's right.
And he is not going to let this go unpunished.
Right. Absalom vows revenge. And 2 years later, during a sheep shearing event, he has Amnon murdered.
Yes.
But here's another interesting detail.
Okay.
Jonadab, the one who helped Amnon set up the whole rape,
right,
knew all about Absalom's plan.
He did.
Oh, yeah. The lecture notes say he was totally aware of what was going to happen.
Wow.
So why didn't he warn anyone?
I don't know. It's so perplexing.
It really is.
Like, he knows everything that's going on.
It's almost like, despite his shrewdness,
right,
he is just totally morally bankrupt.
Yeah, he's got to be.
You know,
dear.
He's willing to sacrifice Amnon.
Yeah, maybe just to protect himself.
To protect himself. Maybe to further his own ambitions in the court.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, who else is he willing to betray, right?
It really does. And then there's this other layer of irony.
Okay.
David, who was so quick to orchestrate Uriah's death, is completely in the dark about what's happening with his sons.
Right.
The lecture notes mention that he gets these exaggerated reports about the sheep shearing incident, thinking that Absalom killed all of his sons.
And David's like totally out of the loop. Totally out of the loop.
Which I think is so interesting because it seems like his tendency to like operate in secrecy and manipulate things has created this atmosphere where everybody's suspicious of each other. You know, and there's all this misinformation going on in his own court.
And he's lost control of the narrative.
He's lost control. He's totally reacting.
He's just reacting to things.
To events instead of being the one shaping them.
Wow. There is so much to unpack here.
Yeah, there is.
It's like all these consequences of David's actions are just rippling outward.
Yeah.
You know, they're affecting not just his own life,
right,
but the lives of everybody around him.
Everybody around him.
And this is just the beginning.
I know. It's just getting started.
Absalom flees after killing Amnon.
Right.
But we know he eventually comes back. So what happens then? Well, you'll have to wait for part two of this deep dive to find out.
Oh, I can't wait.
So we left off with Absalom in exile after murdering his half-brother Amnon.
Yeah, pretty intense stuff.
Yeah, but we know this isn't the end of the story.
Oh, no, not at all. There's a lot more to come.
He does eventually return to Jerusalem, right?
Yeah, he does, after 3 years.
3 years, okay.
Absalom is allowed back.
Back to Jerusalem.
But what's so interesting is the lecture notes use this phrase.
Okay.
They call him, and I quote, a prodigal son who has come home in body, but not in spirit.
What do you think that means?
It's a really good question.
Yeah, I mean,
because on the one hand, it seems like, oh, okay.
It's like, right, he's back.
Yeah, the prodigal son returns.
There's reconciliation, there's healing.
Yeah, maybe there's a chance for forgiveness.
Right.
But the fact that he's not home in spirit really suggests something else is going on.
Yeah.
Like, he might have ulterior motives.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And this is Absalom we're talking about.
Right, exactly.
Cunning, ambitious. He's already proven
that he's violent.
That he's capable of violence.
Right.
So his return, while orchestrated to appear like repentance.
Yeah, you can't really trust it.
Should definitely raise some red flags.
Yeah, for sure.
How does this return even happen? I mean,
I know.
He killed Amnon, David's son.
Right.
I can't imagine David just welcoming him back with open arms.
No, you're right. It wasn't a simple process.
Okay.
It was actually Joab.
Joab, okay.
David's general who makes this happen.
Right.
And remember,
yeah,
Joab himself is no stranger to murder.
Oh, yeah. He's got away with some stuff himself.
Yeah, he has.
Yeah, it's starting to feel like a bit of a pattern here.
Right. Like David's surrounded by all these.
He's powerful, ambitious.
Powerful, ambitious.
And quite ruthless men.
Yeah, it's a little scary.
Okay, so what was Joab's plan?
Well, he uses this wise woman from the town of Tekoa.
Oh, okay. I remember this.
Yeah, this woman goes to David with this elaborate story about her own sons.
Okay.
One killing the other. And she's begging David to spare the life of her remaining son.
Okay.
And it's this, like, carefully crafted narrative.
Right.
designed to appeal to David's sense of mercy and justice.
And the lecture notes really highlighted how clever this scheme was.
It's pretty brilliant.
The way she uses David's own words against him.
Yeah.
Forcing him to see this inconsistency in how he applies justice.
Yeah.
You know, he's willing to show mercy to this woman's son, but not his own.
Exactly.
Yeah. It was a brilliant manipulation.
Oh, absolutely.
And the lecturer points out that Joab, through this wise woman, is trying to make a philosophical point.
Yeah. He's saying that everybody dies.
Right. Right.
But God is in the business of restoring people.
Okay.
Not banishing them.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But is that really what Joab believes?
Right.
Or is it just a clever tactic?
Yeah. Is he really advocating for this?
Or is this just to manipulate David?
It's really hard to say.
It really is. I mean, we know he's not exactly.
Yeah. We've seen his track record.
Yeah. And that ambiguity makes him so interesting, but it also sets this kind of dangerous precedent.
Yeah. I mean, you've got Joab.
Yeah. You've got Joab. You've got Absalom. Both murderers.
Both of them.
Who have benefited from David's mercy, or at least his unwillingness to confront them.
Exactly.
What message does that send to the rest of the kingdom?
I think it creates this sense of
yeah.
instability, a sense that like people in power are exempt.
From consequences?
Yeah.
It seems like everything is resolved.
It seems like it on the surface.
Absalom has returned. There's peace.
Right.
But the lecture notes make it clear this is far from over.
Oh, no. This is just the beginning.
Absalom is not a changed man.
No.
Yeah.
And you know what's interesting?
What's that?
Despite being a murderer, he's actually portrayed as incredibly charismatic.
Yeah. I mean, he was known for his looks, right?
Yeah. The text actually says he was highly praised for his good looks.
Yeah. It's like the classic story of the charming rogue.
Yeah, exactly.
Handsome, charismatic, but with this hidden darkness.
And don't forget,
yeah.
he named his daughter Tamar.
Right. After his sister.
After the sister who was raped by Amnon.
It's like he's keeping that memory alive.
Yeah.
Using
yeah.
it to fuel his ambition.
It makes you wonder if revenge is a part of this.
Right.
Is he just thirsty for power?
Or is it even a twisted sense of justice?
Maybe he sees himself as the one who can finally right the wrongs in his family.
Yeah. So how does he start to make his move? Does he just like march into the palace and declare himself king?
No. Absalom is way more strategic.
Okay.
The lecture notes detail how he starts positioning himself as this champion of justice.
Interesting. Okay.
He would listen to people coming to David for rulings.
Yeah.
And he would subtly undermine David's authority.
Okay. So he's going straight to the people.
He's going straight to the people.
Yeah.
Appealing to their desire for justice.
Like he's running a political campaign.
He's a very savvy politician.
And the lecturer even mentions that he set Joab's field on fire.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Just to get his attention.
I mean, talk about sending a message.
Wait, why would he do that? What was that about?
Well, he was trying to get a meeting with Joab, and Joab was ignoring him.
So this is how he gets his attention.
Yeah. Drastic times call for drastic measures, I guess.
I mean, talk about ruthless.
It shows you how far he'll go to get what he wants.
So did it work?
It did.
He got his meeting.
He got his meeting with Joab.
Okay.
And eventually, David welcomes Absalom back.
But Absalom is not content with just being back in his father's good graces.
No, he has much bigger ambitions.
Right, because he wants the throne.
That's the ultimate goal.
So how does he make this happen?
Well, he uses a religious vow as an excuse to go to Hebron.
Okay.
Which is the place where David was first made king.
Oh, wow.
And while he's there, he starts gathering support.
Secretly.
Secretly. He's capitalizing on all that discontent that he's been fostering among the people.
Wow. So he's using religion as a cover for his political ambitions.
It's a pretty clever strategy.
Very clever, but also
devious.
Yeah. Devious. This is getting intense.
It's about to explode.
Yeah. David's past is catching up with him in a big way. And all these consequences we talked about,
yeah.
it looks like David is about to face the full force of them.
I think you're right about that.
Okay, so we're back, and things are definitely heating up in this story.
Yeah, no kidding. Things are really coming to a head in these final chapters.
Yeah, because we've seen how David's past and some of his, well, let's say interesting decisions about people like Joab and Absalom.
Right, questionable choices for sure.
Yeah, have basically created this opening for a rebellion.
Yeah, and Absalom has definitely taken advantage of that.
Oh, yeah, and now he's actually launched a full-blown revolt against his father.
It's pretty wild. He's not just gathering support anymore.
Wow. So what does David do?
Well, the lecture notes describe something I found really surprising.
Okay. What's that?
He flees Jerusalem.
He runs away.
He does.
I'm a little surprised.
I was too.
Why wouldn't he fight for his throne?
Well, the lecturer suggests a few possible reasons for this.
Okay.
One is that he's trying to prevent a civil war.
I mean, that makes sense, especially one against his own son.
Yeah, that would be devastating.
But is that the only reason?
Well, it could also be a strategic move.
Okay, how so?
By leaving Jerusalem, he's denying Absalom that symbolic victory of capturing the capital.
Right.
And it also buys him some time
Okay.
to gather his forces and come up with a plan.
So it's more like a tactical retreat.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes a little more sense.
And even in his retreat,
Yeah.
he's still the king.
He's got people on his side.
He's got loyal followers, advisors, the resources of the kingdom.
Right.
So it's not a defeat.
But it's still got to be humiliating to be run out of your own city by your son.
Oh, absolutely.
So how does he handle it?
With incredible humility, actually. Yeah,
Really?
he allows people to curse him, even mock him as he flees.
Wow, that's not what I would expect from a king.
Most rulers would be furious.
Demanding revenge, yeah.
But David takes a very different approach.
It seems almost spiritual, wouldn't you say?
I think so. He's wrestling with his past choices.
Trying to figure out what God wants him to do.
That's exactly.
But so what happens to Absalom? Does he manage to take over?
Well, I don't want to give away the ending,
Okay.
but let's just say things don't end well for him.
It's hard to imagine it would, given how he went about this whole thing.
Right. It's all built on lies and manipulation and violence. It's
Exactly.
not a recipe for success.
You know, we started this deep dive thinking about the heroic David.
The giant slayer.
But this part of his life is full of mistake.
And bad decisions.
It really makes you rethink this whole idea of leadership.
It's not just about power
There are consequences.
and integrity.
Yeah, and it's not just for you, it's for everyone around you.
Just for your family, your kingdom, everyone.
Wow, this has been an incredible deep
I
dive.
know, it's really made me think.
Yeah, and you know what really stands out to me is that even someone like King David, chosen by God,
Right.
is not above the law.
Yeah, we all have to face the consequences of our actions.
That's a powerful lesson, and it's relevant today.
More than ever, I think. We need leaders with integrity,
Yeah, leaders who understand justice.
who are willing to take responsibility for their actions.
Absolutely. So, to our listeners,
Yeah.
thank you so much for joining us.
We hope you enjoyed this journey.
Yeah, and we hope it's given you something to think about.
Maybe even inspired you to take a closer look at your own life.
And the choices you're making.
And until next time, keep exploring and keep asking those tough questions.
See ya.